Yes, personal reflections, no PowerPoint slides, and hopefully I'll do this within 10 minutes. So firstly, everybody on this panel has worked very hard, and there are many others in this room who've worked very hard to work to bring this under control or bring it to arrest the syphilis outbreak. I've kind of was personally involved in this from the very start, with intense lobbying to Mac Beavis, the Ministerial Advisory Committee, to ministers. I went to several iterations of health ministers over the life of this outbreak, and unfortunately our constitutional arrangements hampered this outbreak. It was always a state versus state and territory versus the Commonwealth issue, and unfortunately it was very frustrating for the first 4 or 5 years that nobody would invest heavily in the syphilis outbreak. I might say at the time there was lots of good intent and lots of goodwill from people working in the field already, in already stretched positions, doing extra workload in terms of the development of the multi-jurisdictional syphilis outbreak led by Nathan, and involving huge numbers of people from around states and territories. So, there was a lot of work done with goodwill, but also in the context this outbreak has happened in a context of where there's significant turnover of remote area staffing. Territory government published a paper last year, 140% turnover of nursing staff per year, median length of stay 4 months for nursing staff in our remote clinics. Incredibly difficult to bring this under control when you've got determinants like that working against us. This outbreak happened in the context of other national outbreaks, but many of you will recall those national outbreaks. One was the frozen berries from China, where nobody died, but yet seven of our women lost babies in this context. And everybody would remember about the frozen berries. And for an Aboriginal person working in this space, you cannot help the inequity that this has on our people. These stats are our people. Every time a death occurred and the story would arise from local clinicians about the context of it, it was most often young women not presenting at antenatal care on time. But there was one case, the last case, the seventh baby, where the woman had presented at 12 weeks and 26 weeks and had seroconverted between that time. It was her first baby, doing the right thing, antenatal care, but had lost her baby before 26 weeks, and she'd had spots on her hands but didn't recognise it, lived in a remote area and didn't recognise it. And so that's prompted a lot of thinking from myself, really, about we tell young women to get tested, but we never tell young partners of women to get tested. So we developed some specific resources to make sure that to tell young people if you're planning on being parents, that both mum and dad get tested at the start. So I did go to several ministers, and several ministers' responses were shocking. One of them's retired now, and he's up in back in the territory fishing where he belongs. His approach to this was disgusting. I'll never forget that day. But there was a lot of goodwill from the health ministers, but it was also, when the states and territories do something, we'll do something as well. Thankfully, Lucas and Nacho came on board. I presented this data so many times at different places. I remember presenting this data when it was 500 cases. We presented this data at all different venues, at Nacho, at all venues around this country, and eventually we got some traction in terms of getting some input and buy-in into communities. One thing that did happen throughout this scenario was the media. So ABC, that same woman that lost her baby, ABC reported rightly that the seventh baby due to the syphilis outbreak had happened, and it generated a talkback panel on Channel 7 weekend sunrise show, which escalated very quickly into, these young kids in remote communities shouldn't be having sex. We should be taking these children away and creating a stolen generation. And to be honest, that impact of that moment, and there were many times beforehand when the media reported these cases, just generates into a massive degradation of human and social rights and treatment of Aboriginal people because of a public health outbreak. People went on to say these sex diseases in remote communities are all linked to child abuse, even though we know that all of these cases are in 16 to and over. All of these cases, and maybe a few in under 16-year-olds, but mostly, most likely not related to child abuse, but early age sexual debut, very different issues. But they quickly slide into editorial after editorial by right news correspondents around the country. And it really takes a toll on us as Aboriginal people when you kind of see that the story that's been told about our people, largely about a public health outbreak that hadn't been dealt with or had been dealt with at that time appropriately, and related to a woman losing her baby, kind of is very, it's terrible that this happens still in this country. And it went on and on and on, and Channel 7, eventually the Kuris in Sydney protested for days and days outside Channel 7 about the way that the panel talked about Aboriginal people. And I think that is a really powerful thing, that even our mob from Sydney stood up for our people in remote communities and protested. They also protested at the Commonwealth Games, which is around the same time that happened. They wouldn't let Channel 7 get away with it for any longer. So quickly, the media has a very different view about a public health approach to what all of us in this room would think about that outbreak. And it, I just remember going to a RACP training day for the Sexual Health College, and it was at the end of that 2 months of, four weeks of constant media, negative media about our people telling the wrong story, and kind of lost it a bit. But I have to say that there are some good things that have come out of this. So firstly, clinical guidelines have all been updated, and there's still a few to be updated, I heard yesterday, but clinical guidelines have been updated. There's a few states that have now got syphilis registers that didn't have syphilis registers. There are lots of models of care being tested now in communities because of the syphilis enhanced response. We've got heaps and heaps of resources, particularly for remote communities, around this issue. Significant investment into the community controlled sector, lots of community awareness about it, lots of new collaborations because people are working together because of this outbreak. And I think all of those things we often forget about in the grim data of the 2,800 cases we're up to now. In terms of ways forward, I think genotyping for treponema is really one of the solutions we haven't tapped into. It's interesting, Public Health England have named genotyping of treponema in their syphilis action plan. And really, on a practical level, I think if we could get enough samples from people in communities, which is the real issue, we'd be able to determine whether these are multiple clusters or one cluster, and perhaps move our or refine our approach into finding those most at risk in our community. One thing that I think has been disappointing for me is that actual community buy-in to this has been a little bit disappointing. So initially in the early days of the MJSA, we tried to get an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community subgroup of the MJSO. And basically what happened was it was members of the health services, not people in community. I think other than the work that Amanda has led with the YDF, I think communities haven't been involved in this as much as they'd like to. I think our health services have, but as much as I would like them to have been involved over the last little while. And finally, I think I heard Lucas say that we should be learning from this, and I absolutely agree, because I always think at the same time what would happen if this was a HIV outbreak in our remote communities. And I still think that some of the lessons from this syphilis outbreak are very pertinent to HIV outbreaks in our population, because a lot of procedural stuff, a lot of protocols, a lot of clinical guidelines probably haven't been updated as readily as they should have been, as they could be for HIV in our remote communities, nor are our workforces prepared for HIV outbreaks in a lot of our remote and regional areas. So I think there are some big lessons for us, I think, as Aboriginal people, but for the whole sector as well. I think it's been a weird stage of my life witnessing this for the last 8 years, but I think I kind of feel like we're starting to move toward the right direction now in terms of investment. I think there's still a long way to go, and thanks very much.